Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we're watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week's show takes us into the fully animated and deeply weird world of BoJack Horseman, a Netflix series returning for its second season with a sprawling voice cast and a taste for bad animal behavior. Then we'll bring back one of our favorite segments, People We're Pulling For, and talk about some of the folks we hope will see new or continuing success. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week, so stick around.
Hey, if you enjoy Pop Culture Happy Hour, you will love NPR's Planet Money. It's full of funny, insightful stories about how the world works, like the last Euro in Greece and building the Song of the Summer, plus other useful stuff like how to steal a million barrels of oil. Find Planet Money now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.
There are horses and underdogs on the schedule this week, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And this is pretty exciting.
Really is.
This is pretty exciting. It's a big day for us. If you listen to Pop Culture Happy Hour, you know that at the end of absolutely every episode, we tell you that you can follow on Twitter our esteemed producer emeritus and music director Mike Katzeff. But it has been 3 miserable years. No.
Excruciating years.
3 wonderful years, but 3 lengthy years since Mike has been with us for one of our regular weekly episodes. Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
This whole episode's just going to be us catching up.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, what the heck do you do these days?
I think I'm in week 4. I'm a producer at Ask Me Another.
Ask Me Another.
We like those people.
We like those people. So first up this week, Netflix has just dropped the second season of the animated series BoJack Horseman. It features a washed-up horse voiced by Will Arnett, who used to be a sitcom star. The horse did, not Will Arnett did, on what amounts to a cross between My Two Dads and Full House, where the father figure is a horse instead of a person. That would be my description. Mm-hmm. This is one of those shows where animals act like people and they dress like people and they interact with people as well as with other animals. It's all just kind of a world of people and animals living together. Mm-hmm. And Amy Sedaris is in it as BoJack Horseman's agent, and Aaron Paul is in it as a kid who just kind of lives in his house.
Yep.
And
kind of his Cato Kalin.
His Cato Kalin, yeah. And there's a bunch of other people circulating. So because it has been 3 years, I'm going to go to Mike first. Are you a BoJack Horseman guy, Mike?
Yeah. I'm a fan of funny, weird, bizarre cartoons that are for adults, I guess,
so to
speak. And this one is so in my lane. It's just bizarre and surreal, and the cast, like you said, is packed with people.
It is a chock full cast.
And I love everything about it. Like, the design feels like a little like DIY indie comic. It has that aesthetic to it, and the humor is just so surreal and deeply felt too. It gets kind of heavy and serious too, which I like.
Yeah, over the course of the first season, I have not seen any of the second season yet, but I've seen most of the first season. And over the course of the first season, it develops a few themes that it's trying to get at. Glenn, what do you think of BoJack Horseman?
I love it. And I was the one last year who recommended it, who said it was one of the things making me happy. And I was doing that really largely on the strength of the cast, which here are some people we haven't mentioned yet.
Oh, man. Everybody who has ever done a voice.
Yeah. It's basically, hey, who does Glenn like?
Yeah.
Let's cast him. So it's Paul F. Tompkins, Stanley Tucci, Kristen Schaal, Patton Oswalt, J.K. Simmons, Wyatt Cenac, Wendy Malick, Margo Martindale. This year they add Lisa Kudrow to the mix. Mm-hmm. So it's just fantastic. And also the design of the show, as Mike mentioned, kind of an indie comic vibe because it comes from Lisa Hannawalt. She's a fantastic cartoonist who is the author of, among other things, a book called My Dirty Dumb Eyes, which I think I've praised on this show before. And she's also, by the way, doing a podcast, because that's the law,
right,
with the comedian Emily Heller called Baby Geniuses, which is very funny. I like the show. I love the design. The jokes aren't hitting for me necessarily all the time. I think just as a general rule, Hollywood, because it is Hollywood, tends to overestimate the depth that the culture is fascinated by Hollywood. And so there's some jokes in here about agents and casting directors and how self-important and self-involved everybody is, which when you're writing a show about Hollywood and you're telling everybody that they're self-important and self-involved, it's like you are skewering Hollywood when in fact you're just reinforcing how self-important and self-involved Hollywood
sure.
is. So, I mean, I kind of keep wanting the jokes to land harder, but I would watch, or in this case, listen to Will Arnett be a high-status jerk all day long, which is kind of my only option with him because that's pretty much all he plays.
That's kind of what he does best.
Yeah.
I think when it's skewering Hollywood and it's directed at him because he is such an ass, I think that's
and
when
a horse.
It works.
And
a horse, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when it works best, I think, is when it's him being terrible.
Yeah. Well, there is a pivot. As Linda mentioned, the show does get a little bit more complicated and darker during the first season. In the second season, he's coming from a different place. The first season was about what a jerk he is and how clueless and bitter he's become. The second season is about him trying to be a better man slash horse. and so embittered jerk can be funny. It's not necessarily interesting to me, but embittered jerk trying to be better than he is interesting to me.
Well, and part of what I like about the arc of this show, you think it's going to let him off the hook a little bit more mm-hmm. for being an entitled jerk. And there are several points, and Linda kind of alluded to the undercurrent of darkness in this show. It's got a few nice qualities where it'll stop and step aside, and in the middle of all these animal puns and broad Hollywood satire, there are these scathing little bits of commentary. There's a point at which he's talking about the way we treat the troops as heroes, where it's just completely stepping out of this wacky, silly kind of sex jokes and, mm-hmm. and, you know, like I said, animal puns to deliver like these weird little bits of darkness and commentary. I really like that. I do think that this show is not terribly well suited to binge watching compared to shows like Archer.
Right.
That unlike Archer, which is a little bit fizzier than this, this has real notes of melancholy to it and points at which the melancholy feels earned. And so it can, watching one episode after the other, because I just binged 6 hours of this show, it can feel actually a little oppressive. I like it in nuggets.
Yeah, I think this is a show that I would probably watch, you know, one or two at a time and not try to pile them up. And I was thinking today about the fact that this was a show for me that got me thinking a lot about what it means to say your taste in shows runs in a certain direction. It's not only, do you like this thing? Do you not like this thing? It's also how many variations on a theme do you find just delightful over and over again? Because to me, as Stephen mentioned, this is a variation on the same theme as Archer, and particularly for me, goes back to Frisky Dingo,
sure.
which was developed by two guys, one of whom is Adam Reed, who also created Archer. And for me, I am just not as delighted as I think a lot of other people are by the entire juxtaposition of cartoon characters, in this case, cartoon animals with swearing and sex scenes and all that stuff. It's not that it's not good. I think it is good, but it is a variation on that theme. And that theme is not important enough to me that I would probably seek this show out. And after a while of watching it, I get a little bit weary from the rhythm of the jokes and the type of humor that it is. But as long as I watch one or two at a time, I really enjoy them.
Right.
I wouldn't necessarily watch 6 hours of it on purpose.
I sort of forget that it's even a comedy, and ultimately, like, it actually reminds me more of like this new wave of like the prestige drama, the anti-hero, where it's asking about, are people capable of change? Are they capable of redemption after being terrible? What happens when fame goes away and you're ignored or irrelevant? And these are the things that make it more interesting to me than, say, just being a surreal environment where all these animals kind of interact together.
Well, it has a lot of weapons in its arsenal in terms of, as you said, it has a little bit of a prestige television vibe to it, in part because it's got Aaron Paul in it.
Right.
yeah, and we didn't even mention Alison Brie, who we haven't even mentioned.
Yeah, Alison Brie, who brings a certain amount of sanity and gravitas in a way to the show. Mm-hmm. It's BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
But she is his biographer mm-hmm. and kind of love interest.
Maybe, kind of.
And she's intertwined with this dork dog played by Paul F. Tompkins.
Mr. Peanut Butter,
who was in like a rival sitcom because the horse was in a show called Horsin' Around, where he was raising three orphaned Moppets.
Mm-hmm. And, which is basically Charles in Charge,
which
right?
Which is basically, it's a bunch of those shows. And, but then there's just like the publisher is a goofy penguin, and yes. You know, so it's got a bunch of different ways to be silly. At its, yeah.
Right.
At
the
its
publisher
disposal.
Is a goofy penguin because he works
for Penguin.
For Penguin.
Yeah. Right. That is one level of joke.
That's one level of joke.
Yeah. Well, and also Patton Oswalt.
I was just going to say, Twitter has kind of taken a little bit of a toll on how I feel about Patton Oswalt. But but he's very funny in this. I think his voice stuff in this, and he does.
He's
several,
got a lot of little characters.
He does several characters who all kind of sound the same to me, mm-hmm. but I like the voice that he does for them. I think he's very funny. Steven mentioned an episode that involves BoJack Horseman saying something about the troops that he regrets. Patton Oswalt has a primary role in that, which I think is very funny. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy it. There are a lot of people who kind of say to me, like, oh, you don't like this kind of thing. This isn't your kind of thing. These kind of dirty, filthy, grown-up cartoons. And I say, well, it was my thing, mm-hmm. but I kind of got my fill from watching Frisky Dingo mm-hmm. and Kill Face and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And now I don't really watch Archer either.
Sure.
And it's just, I don't know.
Well, and you and I were talking earlier, and you were clarifying, like, there are certain things that you just cannot get enough of.
Right.
Like, there are just other forms
right.
of entertainment where mm-hmm. if there were 17 of it, or there are 17 of it,
right.
you're watching them all.
And everybody has those things. Everybody has those things where they say, I can see 20 variations on this theme. That's how I am with kind of banter romantic comedies and certain kinds of family dramas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are always those things that you could watch a million of, but apparently I ran out of desire to watch filthy cartoons.
It's interesting what Stephen was saying about comparing this to Archer, which is not fair, but let's do it anyway. This show sits in my Netflix queue for a long time before I go back to it, just like you mm-hmm. were mentioning. I burn through every episode of Archer as soon as it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
They're very similar in terms of tone, but I don't think the show has the sharpness that Archer does, because the characters in Archer have recurring bits. Lana! There's a thing that I keep coming back to on that show. The actors are just as great, but here it seems a little broader, a little bigger, not quite as sharp, and not quite as funny.
Well, this is also sadder.
I was going to say, it seems to be going for more sadness.
Yeah.
Like Archer, it's weird. I've talked about my love of Archer on this show before, and part of what I love about it are its rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
Really, when you think about it, each show that you binge watch, each show that you keep coming back to, one of the reasons you keep coming back to it is it has its own rhythm. And like a show like Parks and Rec has this very lively, bright rhythm that keeps me in a good mood. And Archer, in its own way, as much as it has so much of the dialogue in that show is yelled,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's strangely soothing to me mm-hmm. in the way that it's yelled.
Mm-hmm.
This show, it has a little bit more, it's undercutting its own goofiness with that stuff where he's coming to terms with trying to be a better person. Well, like, it's not fizzy, it's not light. You have to be in the right mood for it. I do think if you like Archer, if you like Frisky Dingo, if you like some of these shows, like dirty cartoons, make sure this is a show that you try,
mm-hmm.
because I really do enjoy it. And among the pleasures in it, we've talked several times about that cast, they're just Easter eggs in every episode. Like, I went to the IMDb page for this show, and I had only recognized
right.
half of them.
Yeah. Right.
Like, wait, when was Angelica Houston on it?
Yeah. Well, that's half the fun. You're like, Melissa Leo, Margot Martindale. Like, there's just so many.
Oh, and
trying to, like, in time, you're trying to figure out who is that? You're trying to guess.
Yeah, I was watching it with IMDb in front of me.
It's not hard to place when Margot Martindale comes in, because on every reference, she is playing herself, and her character is called character actress Margot Martindale.
There you go.
Well, I think I would be curious to hear what some of you who are listening think about BoJack Horseman, think about Netflix shows, think about adult cartoons. Because make no mistake, not a cartoon for children.
Nope.
This one, assuming that you follow the most common definitions of what is and is not for children. Not a cartoon for children.
Yeah.
So come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog or on Twitter at NPRPCHH and tell us what you think. When we come back, it's going to be time for one of our old favorite segments that we've done a couple times, People We're Pulling For. So we will be right back with that.
Hi, I'm Carolyn, and I'm calling from Boston. We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can avoid trips to the post office. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your computer. 500,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, use the promo code POPCULTURE for a no-risk trial, plus a digital scale and free postage. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in POPCULTURE. That's Stamps.com, enter POPCULTURE.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. You know, since we have old original producer Mike Katzeff on the show, this week we figured we would return to one of our old segments, which is called People We're Pulling For. Now, every time we do this segment, we wind up cheering for, you know, perhaps some people who are lower in profile, but we always wind up cheering for at least someone who's like, I don't think this person really needs me, but I'm pulling for him anyway. So, you know, there's no strict rules. We just like to, it's just a, you know, best wishes to people whose work we like. And I'm going to kick it off. Stephen Thompson, do you have an entry for People We're Pulling For?
Well, it's funny because you seem to be setting it up as if I was going to talk about an A-list superstar that I was hoping was going to do even better.
Taylor Swift.
No. Taylor Swift.
Someday.
Chris Pratt.
No, it's more your you'll see why I brought it up.
Okay. You know, we've done another segment in the past on the show called Pop Culture Punching Bags. Mm-hmm. And it's where we're defending people who get made fun of a lot. I realized that the person that I picked would fit either category. I want to mount a defense for and root for the success of Sally Struthers. Now, Sally.
Wow.
Left field.
Now, Sally Struthers. Hear me out on this. I'm going somewhere. Sally Struthers. She played Gloria Stivick on All in the Family. Won a couple of Emmys in the 1970s. More recently, best known for doing a long-running series of PSAs for what was known as the Christian Children's Fund and is now known as Child Fund. And has most recently, she's done some voice work. She was on Gilmore Girls.
She was, famously.
But has most recently become a punchline. Mm-hmm. You know, where South Park did a couple of really memorably nasty, scathing bits about her.
Family Guy, too.
Family Guy, I'm sure. I just assume.
You assume.
You're just guessing.
One assumes. No.
She was made fun of repeatedly on In Living Color. Mm-hmm. She
recently on In Living Color.
Really recently on
the old man Thompson.
Old man Thompson.
Hot off the press.
Finger on the pulse of mockery. Because it was on In Living Color. And I was thinking about, like Sally Struthers became a punchline in part because she devoted an enormous portion of her career. She's still acting in mostly like touring companies of, you know, stage you know, musicals. People make fun of Sally Struthers because she devoted this huge chunk of her life to trying to save starving children.
So what you're getting at, if I understand this impulse...
You're giving me a surprisingly dubious look here.
No. I'm not giving you... I will tell you what is happening. Okay. I am sitting here wondering how this came into your head.
I don't know. Every once in a while, I just get mad at people making fun of Sally Struthers. I do.
Yeah, no,
it's a thing for me.
I get it.
Why is it cool to bag on somebody who's trying to help starving children?
In a larger sense, Stephen, I think I might have a way in here. She is being made fun of because of abject sincerity.
Right.
Yeah. Abject, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say earnestness.
Sincerity. Earnestness,
I was
exactly.
going to say... You are coming down as a person who is frustrated by reflexive mockery of earnestness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and believe me, like I went on YouTube today and was watching some of her pitches, you know, where she's like holding starving children and like choking up.
Right. There's always a catch in her voice.
There's always a catch in her voice. And which you watched All in the Family is kind of her voice. Mm-hmm. There's a catch in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And those PSAs, those commercials are hard to watch. There's a whole different set of commercials where like there's that Sarah McLachlan song and you see abused pets.
I was just going to say, people do basically the same thing with Sarah McLachlan. I think that anytime you become a well-known face of a charitable campaign that relies on...
Making people feel bad.
Making people feel bad or sad or heartstring tugging or whatever... It can wind up being something people will make fun of you for.
Right. I understand the impulse to say after a while, like, look, these ads are not fun to watch.
Right.
And I can understand the impulse to change the channel.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand the impulse to be like, look, I will give money. Just stop it with these.
Mm-hmm.
But like Sally Struthers becoming the face of that. And what we're going to do is we're going to target and mock and make fun of Sally Struthers for being an incredibly well-intentioned person bothers me. And I think that, like, go Sally Struthers. I want something good to happen to Sally Struthers. You know, there's a lot of voice acting work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know?
There is. You're suggesting maybe a little BoJack Horseman.
I would. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure I can hear Sally Struthers on BoJack Horseman, but why the hell not? Why the hell not, America?
Little parrot. Something like that?
Sure, why not?
I saw an interview with Sally Struthers because I did some research. I wanted to make sure that she was worthy of my support.
Oh. Sure.
And I saw an interview where she was saying she's doing theater in Maine. She was saying, like, look, I got a mortgage. Mm-hmm. People think I get, like, a big paycheck every time All in the Family airs in syndication. No. I do not.
No.
She's not Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Right.
Like, she was on an iconic TV show for which she no longer gets paid. So, yeah, you have to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, Stephen Thompson pulling for...
I am pulling for Sally Struthers. Help me out. You know what? There are people who listen to this show who have the power to help Sally Struthers.
All I have to
do is... Won't you help Sally Struthers 70 cents a day?
You beat me to it.
It's you right got there on your own. Yeah. You just kind of got there. It was a beautiful thing. Glenn Weldon, people were pulling for.
Jessica, there's a piece of tape I'd like you to play.
He's on a plane to Portland tonight, and then I'm never going to see him again.
Sarah, I've never known you to give up on something so easily.
But he's leaving tonight.
Well, he's not gone yet. Do you know how hard it is to find love in this crazy world? His plane doesn't take off for 15 minutes. You can make it.
You're right.
Yeah.
Guys, I gotta go.
Go. Go get him. Get your man, girl. Get him.
Well, I recognize one of those voices, and I'm assuming that's who you're going to be talking
about. This is from a Funny or Die video called Judy Greer is the Best Friend.
Yeah.
And at the end of that scene, what happens is we watch the main character go out the restaurant doors close, we slow pan back to the table where Judy Greer is sitting there with her friend, just feeling a little over-identifying with the main character.
Right.
And then proceeds to, we see the rest of her miserable life, which what it's like when her best friend goes away. Mm-hmm. Look, Judy Greer doesn't need my help. Judy Greer's doing fine. She is in no less than 3 blockbuster films this summer. She plays a dead mom in Tomorrowland. Mm-hmm. She plays a worrying mom in Jurassic World. Mm-hmm. She plays a divorced mom in Ant-Man. And she is a working actress, and she's getting
work.
She's
in BoJack Horseman.
She is in BoJack Horseman.
When I was watching Jurassic World, and we see Judy Greer in this tiny little part, I felt like the same way I felt like this movie doesn't understand Judy Greer, doesn't understand Chris Pratt. It doesn't understand what it's got because it's like...
$600 million domestic.
Exactly. Well, I mean, like this part of The Worried Mom requires a kazoo and they brought in a saxophone.
Yeah.
What's the point? Why? I mean, I'm torn because I want her to get work. And she is, you know, she's had lots of stuff. I mean, her IMDb page goes on forever. Mm-hmm. And she had her own sitcom called Misguided. She wrote a movie called American Judy, which is all about her. She is fantastic on Archer.
She wrote a book.
She wrote a book, as a matter of fact. Yes, and she's fantastic on Arrested Development. She played an ape in Dawn of Planet of the Apes because her husband really loves Planet of the Apes. Fine, whatever.
Yep.
And she's also, more to the point, the co-star of a fun little series on FX called Married, which comes back for its season 2 premiere actually on Thursday. It is a very realistic, very funny look at a strained marriage, an unapologetically strained marriage, which stars, again, Murderer's Row, Nat Faxon, Brett Gelman, Jenny Slate, Paul Reiser, John Hodgman. It's a great show. And again, she doesn't need my help, but I was trying to figure out why I like seeing her so much. And the first thing I wrote down was intelligence. Mm-hmm. And then I went back and thought of all the characters that I associate her with, like Cheryl on Archer and Kitty on Arrested Development. I was like, nope. But I think you feel her behind the character.
Yeah.
You feel this intelligence. You feel this natural, like the fact that she would do a video called Judy Greer is the Best Friend, because she came to us through movies that you know very well, Linda Holmes.
Indeed.
13 Going on 30, 27 Dresses.
I was just about to say, I have been debating 27 Dresses, not debating, but discussing 27 Dresses in public and in private with a friend of the show and Pop Rocket host, Guy Branum. Mm-hmm. And one of the delightful things about 27 Dresses, of which I am a great defender, and I've brought him around. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say.
Sure.
It's pretty exciting. Just
one at a time. You're going to get all of America.
Yeah, he kind of hates me for it, but I kind of brought him around. Anyway, one of the great things about that movie is she has, in particular, one really lovely scene where she is saying to this Katherine Heigl romantic comedy heroine, she's basically saying, this big gesture that you have just made that would in a lot of movies be kind of the pinnacle gesture of like, now you've gotten your own back, baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of made you feel bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of saying, I mean, I get why it's kind of an amazing thing to do, but you don't seem to feel very good about it. And she can do those best friend speeches that aren't just the you go get him, girl. That's mm-hmm. what's unfair about that. You know, if you were to really conclude that that's the best friend she always is,
uh-huh.
What's really good about her in that movie is she's also able to be the best friend who's like, you're acting like a dummy, mm-hmm. and do that credibly, but lovingly and still anyway. I'm just saying, 27 Dresses.
I'm pulling for her because she often appears in movies that I would never see. Well, that's the thing.
See, I get to see her a lot.
You get to see her a lot. That's the thing.
I get to see a lot of Judy Greer.
I think that more. Intelligence you're talking about, though, even comes through in characters like Cheryl and Archer,
sure.
where the character is a dummy who occasionally dispenses the truth.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between the intelligence of the character and the intelligence of the actress.
Right.
I mean, I think Kristen Schaal is like that.
Sure.
She's played a lot of not that smart people.
But like Judy Greer, you can tell
right.
that it's a smart person
right.
playing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Judy Greer, excellent choice, buddy. How about you, Mike Katzeff?
So I'm going to go a little different, I think. I was thinking about who I would pick if it was a pop culture punching bag, and it led me to actually who I would be pulling for. So tomorrow, which is Tuesday, though this will air after
Friday,
that fact,
yep. uh-huh.
is the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. In years past, little Mike Katzeff would go sit in front of the TV, watch the opening ceremonies, and they would introduce every player for every single team, and every team has to have its own, one, at least one representative. And most years that I can remember, the one Kansas City Royals player would get mentioned, and that was more or less the only time you would see them.
The equipment manager?
Yeah, it would be, and often it would be like some starting pitcher who had a very bad record or very high ERA, or he was not great, but he was as good as mm-hmm, it was going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And you would sort of cheer and go, yay, there's Mark Redman or Ken Harvey, like these random people that I don't really remember anymore. And that would sort of be it. Well, something happened last October that all of a sudden, not just that the Royals inexplicably got good and had this amazing run through the playoffs and made it to the World Series, but somewhere along the line, a very beaten down but very like devoted small fan base became a very rabid, exuberant fan base that is dying to show their support for that team. This year, the Royals are actually better than they were even last year when they made the playoffs. They kind of made the playoffs last year without necessarily being that great of a team. Right now, they are the best team in the American League, and their fan base sort of went crazy. My people in Kansas City, but I think nationally as well, they became sort of like this underdog darling. And they voted in four players that are not just in the All-Star game, but starting. Three other players were selected. The manager of the Royals is managing the American League. And so all of a sudden, like this little baby thing that I feel like I used to just celebrate with my dad is now something that the entire city of Kansas City can celebrate together. And I've sort of noticed something has changed about how Kansas City is perceived in the media. In some ways, there's backlash because like, I think classically good teams are pissed off that the Royals are now good. I think that other media people are noticing that their fans are maybe stuffing the ballot a little bit more than, say, the Yankees
right.
would stuff the ballots.
Yes.
It's a little controversial, but at the same time, it's a little bit of, like, baseball classism happening where, like,
right.
they're
no,
the new
totally
kids
is.
On the block, and how dare they celebrate and show their support.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of all that, in Kansas City, you're seeing more kids sign up for baseball than ever before for, like, youth leagues. More people have shown up to games this year than ever before. There's been 12 sellouts when there's usually like two. There's been like 30-something games where there's 30,000 fans or more at the game. So in some ways, like the All-Star game, despite the fact that it's this, it's coming under like a little bit of a controversy of maybe we overvoted, and I probably did, it ends up being a bit of like a victory lap for last year, but also sort of like this milestone moment of maybe things have changed for this team and for its fan base that has been a long-suffering fan base, and maybe it's like a precedent for like things that are to come. More than like rooting for the team, which is, I think, equally as exciting and fun to do, I'm really excited for like the city and the people who did put up with 29 years of, like, terribleness.
Yeah. Glenn's making a face, so I gotta see what Glenn wants.
Is there a useful distinction between a sports fan and a nerd? Because it seems like if this happened to nerd, people coming to a thing late, or, you know, once it becomes very successful, there's resentment on the part of nerds. Like, well, you're not true fans. But what you're defining, Mike, is fair-weather fans.
Right. Mm-hmm. But Mike's in favor of it.
But Mike is all for that.
Mike is saying, everyone join us, have a good time.
Better late than never.
Big tent.
Participate.
I've thought about this. I have a friend who... So his brother never liked the Royals, but he did. And so now all of a sudden, this friend's brother is really into it, but doesn't know a lot about it. And he's sort of like, I was here first. I've been rooting for the Royals my entire life. In the same, that punk rock aesthetic of like, I knew this band before they got big and signed to a major label or whatever. If it takes Fairweather fans jumping on the bandwagon and helping this team by buying the merchandise and showing up to every single game, that gives the confidence to the owners of the team to say, hey, maybe we should spend more money on good players and sign our hometown heroes and maybe try to compete more regularly. And so I say welcome them all. I mean, I've seen that stadium when there's 8,000 people in that stadium, and I've seen that stadium when there's 40,000 people, and 40, I'll tell you which one is more fun.
Well, I will say that Fairweather late-coming fans of Pop Culture Happy Hour are very much welcome.
Yeah,
so yeah, exactly.
I agree with that entirely. Thank you very much, Mike Katzeff. Sure. So speaking of people who don't really need our help, but who I'm pulling for anyway, there is a movie coming out on August 21st that I saw at the Tribeca Film Festival called Grandma. And the star of Grandma is Lily Tomlin. Lily Tomlin, for a long time, I felt like I did not see enough of her. She was on The West Wing for a while. She works. She's always worked. She's worked in various different things. She's never been somebody who went away and didn't work. But I didn't feel like I was getting kind of enough great Lily Tomlin. And when I saw Grandma at Tribeca, I just thought, this is so amazing. I want everyone to see it, partly because I want them to see her in it. Grandma is about a grandmother who spends essentially a day with her granddaughter, who has come to her with a serious problem that she doesn't want to go to her mom about and is saying, I need your help. It's one of these movies. They have to go see this person and then they have to go see that person. And every single person in this movie is played by exactly who you would want them to be played by. Marcia Gay Harden is in this movie. Laverne Cox is in this movie. Sam Elliott is in this movie playing the Sam Elliott part in this amazing way. Grandma is also getting over a breakup with a much younger woman that she was involved with, played by Glenn Weldon, Judy Greer.
There you go.
And it is a fantastic movie. And I really, really liked it. And she, of course, has been this summer in Grace and Frankie on Netflix with Jane Fonda. If you've never seen 9 to 5, remedy that right away. The two of them, Dolly Parton. Oh, it's amazing. That movie is so much fun. But I just hadn't felt, until I saw her in this film, I hadn't felt like I had gotten kind of the full weight of her powers in quite a while. Because she is very funny, obviously. She's got this very long history doing all kinds of comedy. Not, I mean, more, you know, one-woman shows and characters and things like that. I feel like as she settled into this phase of her life, she kind of finally feels like she can just do what she wants. To me, that movie is kind of my ideal of her and for her work. So again, the movie is called Grandma. And, you know, Lily Tomlin doesn't need me to be pulling for her, as we have said about a bunch of these picks. But I'm going to do it anyway because she's great, and she's great in this movie, and I'm excited about everybody getting to see it. So that is my pick. And when we come back, we are going to move on to our favorite and final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. This episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message are made possible by MeUndies. 90% of your life is spent wearing underwear, so why would you spend it in anything other than a pair of MeUndies? MeUndies fit perfectly, keep you cool, and are made of Modal, which is 2 times stronger than cotton. And now they're offering 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/happy hour. If you don't love them, your first pair is free. Again, that's 20% off your first order of the world's best underwear at MeUndies.com/happy hour.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We have arrived at our final segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what the heck is making you happy this week, bud?
So earlier this week, news broke that one of my favorite comic strips of the 1980s, Bloom County, is coming back kind of in some form or another, more as like a web comic. Burke Breathed, the cartoonist, introduced it on his Facebook page and clearly declaring there are going to be new Bloom County strips.
And he put the first strip up on Monday.
Yeah, and the first strip is up, and it's very much in the spirit of the strip. It's a cute, you know, just a cute little gag. That strip, unlike, for example, Doonesbury, has much more of a silly quality to it that as a teenager I found incredibly appealing. I don't know that I necessarily needed new Bloom County strips, but I'm glad it's there. And that kind of got me thinking about these other recent announcements. Like, there are going to be two more seasons of The Simpsons because they got the whole cast under contract. So now there's going to be a 27th and a 28th season of The Simpsons. South Park has been renewed through 2019, and so it's going to have, it's guaranteed to have, what, 23 seasons? And I realized, like, I don't know that I'm going to read Bloom County strips, but I'm glad they're going to be there.
Sure.
I haven't really been checking in on The Simpsons in years, but you know what? What the heck? I'm glad there are more. Mm-hmm. South Park is a show I probably stopped watching after season 4 or 5, but 23, sure. Mm-hmm. I just think the whole phenomenon of more of everything is a happy thing. It's something to celebrate. And speaking of which, this week, this episode drops on Friday. So Thursday marks the 5-year anniversary of Pop Culture Happy Hour. Mm-hmm. And and so speaking of more things than people possibly have time to listen to, we've been doing this for 5 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's to 28 more seasons.
Here's to, we've been renewed through season 28. So... apologies in advance.
We shall all be back here together. Thank you very much.
And it's fitting that we're doing it with Mike because, you know, he used to sit with us in the room to produce the show. So we would just have to turn our heads slightly to see his look of disdain and boredom.
It's true.
Making the finger to wrap
making
it up.
Making the finger gesture to wrap it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen it many times.
Many times.
Seen it
many
she's have like a cardboard cutout of me now.
It's true. A little standing.
A little standing, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy?
The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage is a new graphic novel by a British cartoonist named Sydney Padua. She's written this really interesting thought experiment where she creates this pocket universe where these two people, Charles Babbage and Ada Lovelace, who essentially co-created computer science. Charles Babbage designed something called the Difference Engine, then later the Analytical Engine, which was a machine that would calculate. And Ada Lovelace created essentially, it's debated, but the first algorithm, so essentially the first computer program. And the way she did it was, she was translating this Italian article about this engine, and as she did it, she made a lot of footnotes that turned out to be 3 times the size of the actual original article. And in those notes is this original algorithm. So to do this book of about this alternate history of Charles Babbage and Ada Lovelace, in which they do actually build an engine, which Charles Babbage never did, Ada Lovelace died very young, they kind of team up and they meet Queen Victoria and they meet George Eliot and they kind of go around Victorian London solving crimes and whatnot. And it's not pulpy at all. It's very British. It's very reserved, but these footnotes that go on forever are very charming and discursive and witty and chatty. It's a lot of fun. It's called The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage, and it came out last month.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Mike Katzeff, what is making you happy this week?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm back on Pop Culture Happy Hour. That's
that?
pretty rad.
Cool. It's pretty cool.
It's been way too long.
We had you on a live show, but we have not had you in a studio show for a long time, 3 years.
I think the thing that's making me happy is, well, two things. This summer, I've been sort of seeing just a boatload of music. I mean, in between, like, changing jobs and all this stuff, I've seen somehow, like, about 60 bands in June and July so far at 3 different festivals. So I've just sort of seen a lot of stuff, and I'm shooting photographs at almost every single one of those
shows. I was going to say, you should find Mike's Instagram, because it's really, really cool to look at Mike's concert photos.
So some of the highlights I've seen, obviously, are, like, St. Vincent and Bjork and Run the Jewels and Against Me and a bunch of, like, young baby bands that are a lot of my favorite things. Honestly, like I think the last week or so, I've just been like getting into all things Ask Me Another because I'm like living, breathing that show. So the thing that's making me happy is being part of that live show and meeting famous VIP guests like Jim Gaffigan and Patrick Stewart. I mean, this is a strange celebrity-filled world. So I don't know. I think just what's making me happy is change and doing new things and taking risks and doing awesome stuff and just making cool stuff.
We could not be happier. Happier. I think what is making me happy is my life is a perfectly
good I'm kind of crushing it right now.
It's a perfectly good answer. Yeah.
Everything's
question.
Coming up, Katzeff.
People I'm pulling for is Mike Katzeff.
All right. Thank you very much. So I got a couple of quick ones of things that we've talked about before that I just want to re-up. The other night, I watched on Netflix again a 30 for 30 documentary called Winning Time, which is about Reggie Miller and his rivalry with the New York Knicks, and particularly with Spike Lee. And it is so much fun. It is so funny, and they have never quite, to me, gotten back this perfect balance of great sports documentary and just delicious comedy. It is wonderful. Reggie Miller is very appealing in it. His sister Cheryl Miller is very appealing in it. Spike Lee, you know, even like Patrick Ewing and people that I don't normally think of as like warm and fuzzy people I love to watch. Funny, and oh my gosh, it's so good. Winning Time. The other thing is Glenn has talked before about the podcast Pitch, which we like.
Yep.
And they just started their second season with a little episode about cover songs, which in the bonus track, Mike is actually on talking a little bit about cover songs.
That's right.
Also in the podcast universe, my friends Sarah Bunting and Tara Ariano over at Previously.tv are doing a podcast called Again With This, in which they are breaking down episode by episode the first season of Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh.
Now, there is a very specific audience for this, mm-hmm. but if you are part of that specific audience, this is your catnip. This is Sarah and Tara just taking apart episodes of Beverly Hills 90210. And on the webpage at previously.tv, they have what they call visual aids. There's a picture of a person in a terrible outfit with like a big red arrow pointing to something on it. And that means that at some point, either you're just supposed to look at it or more likely they will talk about it and mention it. It's really funny. It's them talking. Their regular show, Extra Hot Great, that they do with Dave Cole and a bunch of other people, Mr. Guests or whatever, is also a great show. But this is kind of podcast recapping, which mm-hmm. they're trying, which, of course, is one of their superpowers. So, again, with this.
The great thing about that is you mentioned, like, if this is your thing, you know if this is your
thing.
Yes,
you do.
Exactly.
You don't necessarily need to, like, survey your soul to
right.
determine, like, do I want that?
If you listen to that and you think, like, oh, yeah, I totally want that. So that is the stuff that is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at IDislikeStephen and Glenn at GHWeldon. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our also producer Kiana Fitzgerald at Kiana Fitz. That's KianaFitz. And you can follow our producer emeritus and music director and this week fourth chair, and you know what? Also next week fourth chair.
Yep.
Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, still provides, fortunately for us, our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Especially Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And I will see you all back here, including Mike Katziff, next week.
Hey, if you enjoy Pop Culture Happy Hour, you will love NPR's Planet Money. It's full of funny, insightful stories about how the world works, like the last Euro in Greece and building the Song of the Summer, plus other useful stuff like how to steal a million barrels of oil. Find Planet Money now at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.